Connection.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hegstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Well, good morning and welcome to Education Nation. I'm your host, Rebecca Hegstrom, and I'm excited to say that today we are going to mix it up a bit. We are on our 10th show, which is something of a wonderful anniversary to celebrate in and of
itself, right? Everybody celebrates their 10th anniversary. This is our 10th show. Right. So Saturday mornings at 10:30, KLBB Education Nation. Hey, you never know where it's going to go. It's been wonderful.
Exactly. We have had a lot of fun, actually. And we did decide that we're going to mix it up on our 10th show and talk a little bit about issues that are related to education, but that are also related to the election, issues that affect our public schools, private schools, and otherwise, truly, because the elections are driven by the people who out of those private and public schools. So we kind of want to look at some of what's shaping the election. It's kind of like this big, huge issue that we are seeing in the public today, especially this year.
We see it. We hear it everywhere. It's oxygen in the room on every cable network. I talk about it on Fox all the time.
Exactly.
It's everywhere all the time. But ultimately, politics is a lagging indicator.
Mm-hmm.
It is downhill from education and culture and so many other things. And you know, as we were talking about this 10th issue, you know, we've been talking about Common Core and Standard and so many critical issues to education. We're going to continue to do that on Saturday mornings. But we thought you'd take a pause and kind of look at the larger picture. And I was reminded of an Abraham Lincoln quote that I think frames this entire episode.
Mm-hmm.
The philosophy, he famously said, the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation becomes the philosophy of government in the next.
Absolutely.
And when you think about that, so the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation becomes our politics in the next. And when you look at where we've been with public education, where with religion, with traditional society, we're bearing that fruit right now.
Absolutely.
For better or for worse, on both sides of the aisle with the conversation that's being had. And this isn't necessarily a show about their education policy. We may do that maybe for the 20th episode or
something. Right, there we go.
When we're knee-deep in the presidential. This is more the general contours, regardless of what's happening in the day-to-day or the moment-to-moment, because that changes all the time, the contours of the arguments that candidates are making and what they say about the kind of education system we've got in America.
Right.
And you talk about it all the time. I mean, what we're filling our kids with right now is going to be what they go forth as leaders. And I know Liberty has a different perspective. They say, hey, we're forging leaders of the future and moral leaders of the future.
Right, right. Yeah, I have always said that, Pete. One of the things that frustrates me, honestly, is when parents send their children off to school without a lot of thought about what it is their kids are going to be receiving there, and then wonder down the road why their kids don't share their values, or why they don't share, whether that be religious values or political values or what have you. And we as parents have to be paying attention to what our kids are getting. Education is truly what shapes a nation, really, more than anything else, because that's where the children spend the bulk of their days for 13 years.
That's right.
And so it's no accident.
And then four more years with Marxists at college campuses.
It almost gets worse at the college level.
Yes.
Exactly. But truly, we do see a change in our culture. And honestly, for those who are astute in the history of public education, looking back at John Dewey and Horace Mann, these individuals knew that. They understood that they could get a hold of the future of the culture by educating children in a different way. And that's one of the reasons why we've seen over the course of time this slow evolution of education moving into more and more of a secular humanistic and now postmodern viewpoint.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Which has changed the culture. We have
a very
different looking culture today than we did even 30 years ago, much less 50 years ago.
That is exactly right, which means we have some different looking candidates this year.
We
so
sure
we're going to go there on today's show. We're going to talk Trump. We're going to talk Bernie. We're going to talk Hillary Clinton. We're going to talk Ted Cruz. And then we're going to talk some of the larger trends. So we're going to start, but we'll start with the sort of with Bernie and Trump up front in this first segment. We'll take a break and we'll go to Cruz and Hillary on the other side. But we're going to Bernie Sanders first to talk about him. Obviously, a ton of youth support. You see these rallies, massive rallies of, you know, and anybody who watches a republic or a democracy, you want to see young people engaged and involved. So on some sense, I'm encouraged to see young faces out there. But they're listening to an avowed socialist, or he calls it a democratic socialist. We've got a clip here. We're going to play a Bernie, and then we'll have you react to it. Clip one.
First call is from right at home, Burlington, Vermont.
Oh, boy.
You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Mr. Sanders.
Hello.
I believe that you were introduced as a socialist. I read somewhere that you did not, or you do not, or you never have belonged to the Socialist Party. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Have you ever belonged to the Communist Party?
No, I haven't.
Thank you very much.
I think it's an interesting question. I am a socialist.
I went to an...
So, you've got it. There's a lot more clips we could play. We just happened to play one where he says, hey, I am a socialist. So, if there's one thing America was never founded on, it was state control of the economy.
Right.
It was absolute redistribution of wealth. I didn't find that anywhere in our founding documents.
Did not.
In any of the things that are taught. I mean, we have... So, here we have an electorate that is very drawn to a man who is selling something very different than what America was founded on. What does that tell you about what they've been hearing in the classroom?
Again, and that's exactly what I go back to. You know, when we were just talking about Common Core math, there was actually a math assignment that I didn't share on air that actually was entitled Spread the Wealth. And it was a math assignment for young elementary age school children that was a math assignment that was, you know, spreading numbers out, but they entitled it Spread the Wealth.
Wow.
And that's just one simple example, Pete. There are examples that are filled in the curriculums today.
I'm going to use another one to go back to something we talked about last week, Common Core. They gave a quiz to students about controversial political issues to find out where they are on the spectrum. One of the questions was, unregulated free enterprise benefits the rich at the expense of the poor. If there's one motto of Bernie Sanders, it is take from the rich and give to the poor because they're exploiting you. If you're teaching that in the classroom, then this idea that the 1% will pay for everybody else and is to blame for their ills, that sounds pretty attractive from a candidate.
Well,
doesn't
and
it?
That, and again, and if you combine that with a lack of teaching children how to think critically and analyze, they don't have the tools to really think deeply about this situation.
That's
and
so right.
So somebody like Bernie Sanders can come along and say, hey, this is what I'm going to do. And they don't critically think it through and wonder, how can we actually do this?
That's right. And
they
don't. That's exactly right.
They think
right.
their money just grows on trees, I guess.
They do. Because capitalism is not easy to defend if you're not informed on it.
Right.
It can be easily manipulated from demagogues that say, oh, it's just the greedy capitalists or it's the crony. And there is plenty of cronyism and all those other problems. But the hidden hand of the free market, the principles of supply and demand, you have to really understand how it works in order to defend it. Because there will be winners and there will be losers.
Right.
There's risk involved.
Yes.
There's failure.
Yes.
There's creative destruction. Principles that if you don't learn that in a textbook, it all just looks nasty and brutish and unfair. And then you look for this guy like Bernie who will say, no, I'll even it out. We'll make it all fair. And everyone goes, everyone
Sounds
claps
good.
Like seals.
And again, there's, you know, emotional thinking that's happening today, much more so than critical thinking.
Yeah.
And I'd like to recommend actually for our listeners a video that you can find many different versions of this. Many listeners might have actually heard of this already. The iPencil video that talks about the invisible hand. And you can actually Google that and find out more. But it really does do a nice job of helping kids. In fact, Jeff Button, our government law teacher, shows this in his classes. He does an outstanding job, as does John Bala and our other teachers, at teaching the kids about free market principles. How does this work? And why is it actually more generous rather than less generous?
It has led to the most human flourishing and prosperity of any system on the face of the planet.
Yes.
You're exactly right. And Liberty Classical Academy teaches it. Most schools don't. Hence, the rise of Bernie. All right, we'll leave Bernie right there. I'm started realizing now we could probably do an entire episode on each candidate, but we're going to try to keep it quick here and we'll go next to Trump.
All right.
So Donald Trump dominates the airwaves. He is a force of nature. He's almost a guttural scream of the electorate. And I know, I think that's a fair way to say it, fighting on a lot of different fronts. He also, you know, uses language, let's say, interestingly. He talks about having a great brain and using the best words because he went to war. We've got a quick clip we'll play here.
I went to an Ivy League school. I'm very highly educated. I know words. I have the best words. I have the But there's no better word than stupid. Right? There is none. There is none.
I want to say something.
There's no word like that. So...
Didn't you know, Pete? There's no better word than stupid.
Oh, my gosh. It is... He's got the best words. That's how I'll put it. It's amazing, but I'll tell you this. People are looking for someone who will say, yeah, I got the education, and I know that stuff, but I'm at your level, and I'll speak to you. And there's no doubt an appeal to that coming from people who are looking for something different from what they've seen.
Well, and also, again, we come into this lack of thought, this lack of thinking that is taking place in our culture, the soundbite culture, the fast food culture, that just doesn't want to have to take the time to think through the issues. So a guy like Trump comes along when a large swath of the population is frustrated, and he just raises the energy level by simply just inflaming their frustrations and their aggravations. And he's bringing out almost the basest part of our society, which I find really sad.
Well, it is sad, but at the same time, you see... When you've had 7 years of mom jeans from Barack Obama.
Yes.
I'm serious.
And that is the problem.
That's the problem is that people are looking for a leader.
Yes.
But history teaches us, and you've got some interesting historical examples, and we don't even have time to read from them necessarily, but then when people feel vulnerable, they reach for strength. They reach for almost this authoritarian feel. Yep. And I won't go so far as people have, they've used nasty words to describe Trump. I won't go that far, but he definitely has that kind of streak in him.
Yep.
People are looking for that, unfortunately.
But they're going from one extreme to the other.
That's right.
And in some respects, Pete, I really think the two of them are actually quite similar. Obama just tended to go about his desire to control and do things the way he wanted to do in a much more subtle and gentlemanly way. And yes, in a timid way as well when it came to foreign policy. But on site here in the U.S., I feel that he spent a lot of time kind of dictating what he wanted to do. And if he didn't get his way, then he went around, he skirted the system. And then you've got Trump, who, of course, we don't know if he's going to actually win office or not and what he would do once he gets in there. But the way he's talking now, he sounds like he's just going to go in there and say, well, I'm going to build the wall and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And it's just the way it's going to be. So really, what's the difference between the two of them?
Yeah, and if one used executive action subtly, we have a Congress and we have a lot of other things that Trump would have to deal with.
Yeah.
It remains to be
just
seen.
Just because you may agree
happen.
With some of the things that Trump wants to do doesn't mean the way he's going about it is
Washington
the right way.
Has a way of throwing things in the gear. I want to talk about the other side of Trump as well, though, because he's had rallies and they've been big, and he's now got protests that come outside them at almost every turn. I think the protesters and what they're yelling tell us a lot about higher education today, because what they're not doing is traditional protests of signs saying we disagree with Mr. Trump, we don't like what he has to say. They're literally trying to shut him down. They're trying to say you shall not speak.
Right.
Where does that come from?
Well, remember our show on the safe spaces.
That's right. You can find it on our podcast online.
I think it was show number 3, if I remember correctly.
But seriously, go online.
Yes.
Check it out on at KLBB or Liberty Classical Academy. We've got all the podcasts. One of them was Safe Spaces, where we talk all about this.
Yep. I think it was the 3rd show that we had, or maybe the 4th. But yeah, truly, these kids because it was mostly young people that is, you know, that are blocking the highways, you know, to the Trump rally in Arizona and what have you. They are used to thinking that they can demand that people agree with them. And this whole idea of free speech, honestly, is becoming almost a dinosaur. And
it's amazing.
Unless you think the way the group think thinks, then you are in trouble. And you're not just silenced anymore. You're lambasted.
Yeah. That's right.
And what happened to respectful dialogue? You know, that's one of the things that we try to emphasize at our school. We want to teach kids all different viewpoints, and we want to teach them how to have respectful debate, respectful dialogue, understand how other people are thinking and feeling and believing, so that you can then approach that from your own views, but in a respectful and kind
There's
manner.
There's a vigorous disagreement with some level of mutual respect that's afforded.
Yes. And I truly believe that that's one of the things that did make this nation great.
Yeah.
And we are... losing that very quickly now with this new generation of young people who thinks they can silence whoever that they disagree with.
Even if you don't like what Trump's saying, he has a right to say it. And
exactly.
How many Trump people are you going to find at Bernie rallies saying, shut him down, don't let him speak? Or at Clinton rallies, shut him down. It's not happening.
Yeah.
This is one side of the political spectrum, the left, that's saying we will shut you down. And who has controlled those levers at higher education and elsewhere? Unfortunately, the progressive left. So we're seeing it on that side. We're going to wrap for a quick break right now. We're going to come back. I mean, it's easy. Again, we could talk Trump all hour as well. We're going to come back and talk about Hillary Clinton and Ted Cruz on the other side of the break. We don't need no buzz control. We are back. It's about 10:45 on your Saturday morning here at KLBB, and I am joined, as always, with the host of our show, the headmaster, Rebecca Hagstrom, headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy. And we're talking Education Nation. We talk education, but today we're talking a little election. Right?
Yes, it's true. You can't avoid a conversation about this election, can you?
You cannot.
And you know what they say, if you can't beat them, join them, which is what we're doing right here on the show today.
Why not join in? But people are talking about, you know, we've really, in the last 9 weeks, this is our 10th show, really got deep into some education-heavy topics, which we're always going to do. It's the point of this show. We thought we'd take a quick pause, though, and talk about the manifestations of our
which
education.
Which I think is very important, because really, why is education important? It's because of the citizens that it produces.
That's right.
So,
great point, and that's what Liberty does, and that's why I send my kids their shameless plug, as always. So we just talked about Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, which are some of the more obvious examples of sort of the manifestations of our education. Now we're going to talk briefly about Hillary Clinton and Ted Cruz. Let's play a clip first of, well, I'll set it up a little bit first. Hillary Clinton, obviously the front runner on the Democrat side, is doing the best she can to position herself, even though there's clearly an enthusiasm gap. People are not excited about her. You also noted a couple things that she's got going against her right now. Likeability and...
Yeah, so the likeability, favorability, trust. And I think that trust issue is huge.
Yeah.
And she definitely is lacking in those areas. And I do think that that's one of the reasons why Bernie Sanders is doing so well.
Absolutely. So she's trying to shore up support, and she does so in some interesting ways that I think are very revealing. Let's play clip number three.
Well, over the weekend, Senator Clinton and her campaign took a trip down south, and apparently so did her accent. Listen to this.
I don't feel no ways tired. I come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy. I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me.
I mean, I'm sorry. I don't even know what to say. I don't need to say anything. It's shameless pandering.
It speaks
And that
itself.
Clip is, it speaks for itself. And I think what you see with Clinton, there you've got pandering to a black electorate that she knows she needs. But she, time and time again, especially if attacked, plays gender politics too, because it's beneficial for her. So whether it's race politics or gender politics, to pull out the female vote or the African-American vote, it's not the right kind of politics we want, is it?
And it's not genuine. And it's very divisive. And that's what I have most objected to, most recently with her type of election, but also even with President Obama. I feel that the whole issue of divisiveness has been accelerated in our country. And we see women, men, rich, poor, black, white, Hispanic.
You know, it's a balkanization.
Yes. And, you know, there was a day when America was called the melting pot, and now we have that word outlawed and banned on several college campuses.
That's right.
And we can't even probably look at ourselves as a salad anymore. I think that was the next analogy, you know, separate different groups living together, And now it just seems that we are becoming really isolated individual groups out for our own best interests. And how in the world is that ever going to breed the best interest for America?
It's such a great point, Rebecca. And our founders previewed it in document after document that if our country descends into rich against poor, black against white, male against female, or basically they usually summed it up as class warfare.
Right.
It's the beginning of the end.
It is.
Because you can't you can't pit your own citizens against each other and expect to perpetuate a republic. And I think Clinton is one of the worst offenders of
it. Well, and it's like a team, right? Our country is like a big giant team, and if we're not working together, if for the good of the society, then it's going to go down.
It's one of the, he even acknowledges it, the unfortunate legacies of Barack Obama. He had said as an aspiring candidate that there were no red states or blue states, just the United States of America. Hey, which a lot of people wanted to hear.
Of course, we all want that.
Yet he's accelerated divisiveness by building up straw men and knocking them down and talking about Things have accelerated in the wrong direction as it pertains to class warfare, and now you see candidates in Hillary Clinton, who's vulnerable now to a Bernie Sanders challenge, doubling down on it, and it goes back to our education.
Yes.
That if you're trained and taught to think as a race, or think as a gender, or think as a class, which our education is now doing, through the stuff we've talked about, go to the podcast, listen to the previous episodes, do the research, they're teaching kids not to not see race, but to see more race. And what that does to our politics is it encourages politicians to chase that sentiment. Across the board.
Really, really unfortunate.
It's really
not
sad.
What we want.
Well, So again, we may do a show on more on depth than a lot of these candidates because there's so many other sides to share, but we're going to jump over to Ted Cruz, who is also in a battle with, obviously, with Donald Trump. And we're just picking particular aspects out from these candidates. There's more we could talk about than just socialism with Bernie, more than just the rallies with Trump, and more than just class warfare with Hillary Clinton. But we're trying to pull out some nuggets that speak to education. And the one I want to talk about with Cruz, and you said, you know, it's very near and dear to your heart, is faith, invoking religion.
Right.
And how that is a part of our politics. We're going to play a quick clip of Ted Cruz on the trail.
I became a Christian when I was 8 years old at a church youth camp. And it is an integral part of who I am. And I will tell you, have you noticed Washington and the media? They want us to be ashamed of our faith.
It scares them.
It scares them. And we need to just speak the truth with a smile.
There you go. I mean, he and others, I mean, Marco Rubio did, others have talked more about faith, but it makes some voters uncomfortable, especially younger voters when you talk to
them. Right. Well, and again, it does tie back to our education. You know, back in 1962 and 1963, public reading of Bible and prayer in the public schools was eliminated by the Supreme Court. And so from that year on, our public schools slowly began to eliminate all elements of faith, where it used to be integrally connected to the public school education that kids were reading and learning about. And, you know, if you think back to John Adams, he says, you know, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. And when public education supported that, it seemed reasonable to expect that that would be the case. But when you remove Bible reading and prayer from the public schools, well, suddenly that's going to change, right? You're not going to have that moral compass. And slowly but surely, we've seen our whole nation move, and we are now in a post-Christian culture. There's, you know, really, truly, it's the minority. And so it shouldn't be a surprise, actually, when we look at it that way, that people would be uncomfortable with his faith. What surprises me more, though, is that people actually think that that should disqualify him. Everyone has some type of faith. You know, secular, humanist, atheist, whatever you are, that is a type of faith. And that is the way you are going to approach your politics. It's going to be the way you approach the way you live your life, how you raise your kids, what you spend your time doing, what you read. And so nobody can check their faith at the door.
Sure.
Regardless of what that faith is.
It's why I say, it's again why I send my kids to Liberty Classical Academy, because they don't have to check their faith at the door.
Right.
But they have been, they're almost ridiculed for attempting to introduce it in a public school. And what they're more likely to get is a sort of condescending, politically correct articulation of another faith, like Islam or others, and be made to say, well, you should be you're sort of white-shamed or religiously shamed or whatever for having a conventional or traditional view. And they're told, well, no, you got to check that at the door and at the altar of diversity or multiculturalism or any other higher values, they're confronted.
Yeah, and those other religions are given much more priority now. And we actually shared an example. I think you read last week on the show an example of Islamic culture actually being, what, 20%? This particular curriculum company was selling to 20% of the districts
That's
across
right.
the nation.
That's right.
And, you know, unfortunately, you know, Ravi Zacharias, if anybody doesn't know him, look him up. He has said, he's from India, and he became a Christian, and he said, you know, I don't know why America is so ashamed of the religion of Christianity and Judeo-Christian values, because it is what made this nation great. Mm. We shouldn't be ashamed. We should be proud of it.
That's right.
And yes, we want to live respecting other religions as well, but that doesn't mean you shut down.
And our country was founded exactly. Our mm-hmm. country was founded on escaping religious persecution and freedom to worship in whatever capacity. They fled state churches in Europe to come to the United States.
Yes.
We're going to have to wrap right there on particular candidates, but think about it in summary. We talk socialism with Bernie. Mm-hmm. You talk shutting down the First Amendment and Trump's right to speech with mm-hmm. Trump. Mm-hmm. You talk with Clinton race and mm-hmm. class warfare. And then you've got religion. You add all that up, those all tie back to the classroom.
Yes,
those all tie back to the way mm-hmm. we view education mm-hmm. in our politics. So mm-hmm. we could talk forever for
yes,
all of them.
Could.
We're going to take a very quick break. We're going to come back and wrap this show.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Well, welcome back. We have only a few minutes left here in this show about the presidential election, and we just want to highlight the fact that in touching on each of these candidates, Pete, we did not want to in any way tell people who they should be voting for. What we were doing is picking out salient features that seem to really quantify and represent how they look to American voters, socialism and the divisiveness and the shutting down of conversation with Trump and
religion.
The religion with Cruz. Because this truly, you know, what we're seeing is really symptomatic of the lack of thinking and processing and analytical thought that is happening in the electorate today. And that's not to say that people don't maybe understand that they should be doing that, but I think some of it is that they're just not taking the time to dig in and research.
And so much has been imprinted on their who they are and their brain through levels of education that they're attracted to rhetoric or attracted to ideas.
Yeah.
It's not that people are dumb. I don't think people are dumb. Mm-hmm. We got smart people across this country. They're just, it's in their DNA now to start to think in these certain ways, to think in ways of class, to think religion doesn't belong in the public square, to think that, hey, socialism might be okay. Maybe that's what we should do because they weren't infused with the values and the principles to fortify them to say, no, a good citizen stands up for capitalism, what made us has been brought our prosperity.
Not just America, but all across the Western world.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think I hope we were able to kind of pull out those contours. And really, I think in this 10th show, and I want to pat you on the back for doing a fantastic job over these 10 segments.
Thank you.
Because ultimately, education is what prepares people to be leaders of the future. Yep. It's what Liberty Classical Academy does so well for the next generation. Mm-hmm. And right now, if you don't like the candidates we've got right now, then you should look around at our education system.
Yeah. Don't just try to fight things from a surface level, which is kind of where we're at when it comes to politics. You're dealing with the current system. We need to be dealing with the future. And the only way to deal with the future is to look at the kids today.
That's exactly
right.
We
have to focus on how they're being educated.
We will close it with how we started it. The philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation becomes the philosophy of government in the next. So said Abraham Lincoln. He was right then.
Well said.
He's even more right now.
Yes.
And I think whether you knew that quote or not, it's why you started Liberty Classical Academy in the first place. So we're going to be back next Saturday, same bat time, same bat channel, with another hot topic and episode for Education Nation. Rebecca, always wonderful to join you
on
Saturday
mornings.
And
you too, Pete. Thanks so much for
Thank
all
you.
Of your guidance and help.